what is helpful content? And maybe you could also tell us what isn't helpful content.
The way that I see it is a couple things. One, I think what we've obviously seen is there's a change in search trend, right? The example I always use is like, I have this crazy cockapoo dog who barks all over the place. And so I'm constantly doing searches like how to stop my cockapoo from barking, right? Or how to train my cockapoo, right? So I'll do a search like that. I'll go to page one. I'll go to the first result. It'll give me some pretty good information. Say, okay, that gives me something to start with. I'll go back, result two, get pretty similar information, maybe a little bit different, but pretty similar. I'll go back, I'll go to result three, get the same thing. And then the next thing I do, I'm out. I'm going to either Reddit searches, right? I'm doing a site colon Reddit, or I'm going to TikTok, right? And I think that's happening a lot with a lot of people's searches. And I think, so for me, the first definition of helpful, the reason I go to Reddit, the reason I go to TikTok, I want to see real people. I want to see real people and their perspective and how they're actually solving that problem, not just what some random copywriter wrote on akc.org or whatever the site is, right? And so that to me is number one. Are you actually providing real perspectives? And it doesn't have to be your own perspective or the writer's perspective. It could be your in-house team perspective. It could be you sourced it from someone expert in the industry. But I need real perspective on like, how did you actually have this problem? Is your problem similar to mine? And is there a way for me to solve it?
Hi, and welcome to the Optimize Podcast. My name is Nate Matherson, and I am your host. On this weekly podcast, we sit down with some of the smartest minds in content marketing and SEO. Our goal is to give you perspective and insights on what's moving the needle in organic search. Today, I'm thrilled to sit down with Dwayne Hogan, a freelance SEO consultant based out of Utah. He has over 14 years of experience in SEO, including in in-house leadership roles with world-leading brands. This week, we are going to go in-depth into one of my favorite topics, content briefs and content outlines, but we will also chat about the recent algo updates and a lot more. And this episode of the Optimize Podcast is brought to you by Positional. If you don't know by now, my name is Nate, and I'm one of the co-founders of Positional. And we just launched our toolset publicly in late March. That means that you can go to positional.com and sign up for our toolset and play around. We've got a trial. We'd love for you to check out our tools for keyword research, internal linking, content optimization, and we've even got a couple tool sets for analytics as well. And you can check it out at positional.com. Dwayne, thank you so much for coming on this week's episode of the Optimize Podcast.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you and I have known each other for a few years. We got connected through Brett, who was on our podcast pretty recently, Brett Ferris. I know he and you worked together at ClearLink, and that's how you and I got connected a few years back. But for all of our listeners, the first question I always ask is, how did you get into the world of content marketing and SEO?
For me, you know, it's a similar story to a lot of SEOs because, you know, 2007, 2008, there was no knowledge base around SEO. You had Moz and then a handful of sites and that was it. So for me, the story I always tell is me and my wife were just starting to date and she was in hair school. She was going to be a cosmetologist and she was getting out of school and she wanted to, you know, she was about to look for a job and start her career, but she didn't want to work at a Dollar Cuts or some hair salon, right? She wanted to do things on her own. So we decided to do it out of our crappy apartment here in Utah. And she was like, well, I need a website. So I was like, great, I'll build you a website. I had no idea. But this is WordPress 1.0. You can throw a theme up and get something going. So built that first website. And then once I got that built, she was like, well, I need to get it on Google. And so that was the next that was trying to figure out how to get it on Google. So once I figured it out from there was, you know, a lot of Moz articles, a lot of torrents of SEO conference videos I got, a lot of YouTube videos and just putting it all together. And then, you know, got lucky in my past, like if I was a computer tech support technician, and the company that I worked for said, hey, we just fired our SEO agency. We know you're sort of dabbling in this stuff. Do you want to give it a shot? And so that's where my start happened. Worked for them for about a year. And then, like you mentioned, worked at ClearLink was my next job and stayed there for quite a bit. So I think that's a pretty common story. Like, no one really has a straight, you know, path into SEO. It's always something weird that sort of drives people into it.
I've made this joke too many times on the podcast, but I'm going to make it one more time and then I promise not again. But I've made this joke like that no one sets out to be an SEO when they're growing up. Like, no one was like, I want to really rank well for best hair salons in Utah when I grow up. But I'm curious, is your wife, is she still in the hair salon business?
Sort of retired. It's pretty physical job. And so the sort of, she got some injuries, just from holding her arms like this for hours a day. But she did it for a good, 15 years, as long as we've been together.
Maybe we'll pack some local SEO questions here at the tail end of the episode, because that is a topic space that I don't know that much about. But, on this episode, we're going to talk mostly about content briefs, content outlines. In the episode with Brett a few weeks back, he mentioned that you were the king of content briefs, and you've got such a great process that both saves time and also helps us create more fantastic and helpful content. And so I do want to dig into your process. I want to learn about the steps that you go through when creating a content brief, what a good content brief is, what a not good content brief is. I really want to get in the weeds on this episode. But first, I just have one or two questions I have to ask. There's been a couple of pretty big algorithm updates lately. There was the March core update. There were a couple spam updates. And what do you make of the recent content updates from your view as an SEO consultant?
Yeah, I think the first thing that I think about, and I've been thinking about this really for the last couple of years, is that this is the norm. Gone are the days of one to two major algorithm updates. It used to be one to two in every year and a half or 2 years, right? You have a penguin update that came out 2 years and maybe a random panda update. And then it started to get to where it was like one or two a year of major algorithm updates and maybe something smaller here and there. And now it's going to be like, it feels like it's going to be just every month or every other month. So that's the first thing I think about, is that it's getting pretty volatile and it isn't slowing down. I think this is going to be the norm from Google, that they're just going to treat algorithm updates like Chrome releases and just crank them out as fast as they can crank them out. So that's the one thing I tell my clients is, make sure you're doing the right things. You got to stay algorithm resilient, or else, 1 month you can be great and the very next month you can get hit. In terms of the algorithm updates themselves, I think for me, the way that I'm approaching them is not as we're doing something wrong. I think in most cases, most SEOs know the right things to do, or at least some semblance of the right things to do and the best practices. I think what this is actually moving us toward is just the way that Google wants us to write content and create content on sites, right? I think these algorithm updates are just moving us away from, I saw you did a post, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, on just like the old school, write 3,000 word ultimate guides, right? It just squeezes so much content on those pages, right? I think they're trying to move us away from that and move us into whatever they deem as valuable or helpful content, right? And I think that's really what these algorithm updates are less of a penalty and more of this is just the direction that we want you to move towards in building your websites and crafting content. So it's not getting any slower. It's not going to get any easier. I saw a post on Twitter the other day with Danny Sullivan. And it was this site owner who owns like a French vanilla and chocolate e-com site. And the person reached out to him and said, hey, look at my site. This site looks pretty good. Why am I penalized? And Danny Sullivan very much replied back, yeah, it does look pretty good. We'll have to look into it. Like, I think it's just getting really hard. The stakes are higher. The benchmarks are higher. And I think that we're just in a place where Google's just trying to move us to those new benchmarks.
Yeah, well, we will have to include a link to that. What was it? An ice cream, a frozen yogurt site?
A France vanilla, like not French vanilla, but yeah, sorry, I should have specified that. A France vanilla, the spice, whatever vanilla site. So it's like a fancy vanilla site, I guess.
Oh, well, we need to check that out. So yeah, we'll definitely include a link back to
it. I'm not French, so I couldn't read it. But like, if you do just like a Google Translate, just look at the content, it's like, yeah, this looks pretty decent. I don't understand why they were hit.
Well, it sounds delicious. And hopefully they've built at least one backlink this month from the Optimized podcast. But yeah, so I want to ask, because you said like, we need to create helpful content, or at least Google is telling us to create helpful content. And I'll preface this question by saying I talked to a Series A startup this week who's driving a lot of traffic to their blog, but they've lost about like half of their traffic since the helpful content update, and they haven't really been able to recover. And I said to them, like, oh, like you must not have helpful content. And they said to me, like, oh no, our content's pretty good. Like, what makes it unhelpful? And so I'd give you that question, like, what is helpful content? And maybe you could also tell us what isn't helpful content.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the thing that I struggle with Google and their messaging the most is that they come up with a lot of questions and these surveys that you should do in your content, and these type of audits, but nothing's really tangible, right? And so I would say, start off by saying this is pretty subjective stuff for me. The way that I see it is a couple things. One, I think what we've obviously seen is there's a change in search trend. Right. The example I always use is like, I have this crazy cockapoo dog who barks all over the place. And so I'm constantly doing searches like how to stop my cockapoo from barking. Right. Or how to train my cockapoo. Right. So I'll do a search like that. I'll go to page one. I'll go to the first result. It'll give me some pretty good information. Say, OK, that gives me something to start with. I'll go back, result two. Get pretty similar information, maybe a little bit different, but pretty similar. I'll go back, I'll go to result three, get the same thing. And then the next thing I do, I'm out. I'm going to either Reddit searches, right? I'm doing a site colon Reddit, or I'm going to TikTok, right? And I think that's happening a lot with a lot of people's searches. And I think, so for me, the first definition of helpful, the reason I go to Reddit, the reason I go to TikTok, I want to see real people. I want to see real people and their perspective and how they're actually solving that problem, not just what some random copywriter wrote on akc.org or whatever the site is, right? And so that to me is number one. Are you actually providing real perspectives? And it doesn't have to be your own perspective or the writer's perspective. It could be your in-house team perspective. It could be you sourced it from someone expert in the industry. But I need real perspective on, like, how did you actually have this problem? Is your problem similar to mine? And is there a way for me to solve it? So that's the number one thing. I think the number two thing that I think about is engagement. You know, there's back and forth on whether Google measures engagement or not and how they do it or whatever. But there's one shift that actually sort of signals to me that this is at least what they're thinking about. And it's actually Google Analytics 4. So Google Analytics 4, they completely rebuild it. Everyone hates it. But the thing that sort of stands out to me is the event tracking, right? We now have events like clicks, which is not clicks on site, but clicks off site, right? We have downloads, file downloads, video views, stuff like that, right? Scrolls. And I think that to me was a signal that Google's saying, hey, your content's got to be better. Like, this is how you actually measure value in your content, right? Are people either A, coming to your page and then saying, oh yeah, this is where I need to go, and clicking off to the site that they actually need to go to? Or are they coming to your page and they're engaging with a video? Or are they coming to a page and downloading something that's valuable to them? Or are they coming to their page and buying something, right? A purchase. So I think that's the other way to sort of measure it, right? Is whatever those events are available on your page, are you actually solving for those? And if you're not getting any events off that page, if it's just a scroll, that's probably not a definition of helpful content. So those are two things I think about is, like, make sure you're having real first-person perspectives. I think most sites are going to cover, like, comprehensive content. They're going to do the things of, like, looking at the top 10, seeing what the headings are, seeing what people are talking about. Are you going the extra mile of putting actual real perspective on there? And then are you going the extra mile of measuring that engagement and making sure it's actually valuable to users?
Yeah, and to your first point on, you know, trying to get a solution to your problem of your was it a cockapoo?
Cockapoo. I know, it's terrible.
Cockapoo barking, and those first three SERPs all essentially being identical to one another. I think you bring up a good point here. We had a guest on the Optimized podcast last year, Mike Haney from Levels, and he said that the bar from which they create content is, are they adding something new to the internet? Do they have something unique to say? And if they don't, like, why are they creating that piece of content? And And just in my own searching, it's clear that like I think Google is trying to surface like more unique insights and perspectives. And my mind always goes to like Brian Dean and Backlinko, where, you know, I felt like I was having a real conversation with Brian when I was reading one of his articles. I wasn't just reading like a cookie cutter article. And, you know, over the last few years, there's been like a proliferation of content optimization tools. And, you know, we have one at Positional. But I think for SEOs, like for the last few years with these content optimization tools, everyone has been trying to create the exact same thing as everyone else. But maybe now that's not the best approach or strategy. And you maybe do need to do something a little bit differently with the actual words on the page. And then to your second point on engagement, I do fall into the camp as an SEO, as someone who believes that Google tracks like engagements and the actions people take to signal if a page is actually a good one or not. And so I totally agree with you that I think Google is paying attention to those on-page signals, those next steps, which would give them clues that someone is getting exactly what they need or finding that next step in the journey. So totally agree with you there. And I think you've explained it, you know, much better than I could. So thank you for that. And as far as like the spam updates go, you know, I'm sure you have seen on Twitter, like everybody posting about like the decapitated AI generated content sites. I think there was one getting like a million visitors a month and now they've been removed from Google. And so I have to ask before we move on to content briefs, what do you make of AI generated content? And as a follow up with these recent spam updates, is AI generated content just not a type of content that we should be using on our websites?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't have a full answer because I haven't done a whole lot of testing into it. I'm starting to test with a couple of clients, small, definitely not going anything full scale. So here's the way that sort of I'm approaching it, though. I don't think, you know, Google has said, you know, in the beginning, it was like, don't use AI content, right? And then they came out last year, I think it was the last helpful content. It was like, that's okay, as long as you add some value to it, right? As long as it's valuable. And they sort of continued that messaging. Maybe they backtrack a little bit on this last spam update, but they still sort of say, you know, as long as a page is valuable, we'll consider it. And so that is the game. So for me, let's go back to the previous question. I would incorporate that stuff on my AI content, right? My own perspective, right? Even if I'm, you know, one of the things I like to play around with is dictating to like ChatGPT maybe a thought on a topic and then have it write it back as a blog post or something in first person, right? So whether the AI is writing it or whether you're writing it, still need that first person perspective or at least some sort of perspective other than just what everyone else is saying. We still need to track engagement. The other part is I don't see it as pulling out great content now. I think it's close, but when you look at just how writers actually write, voice, tone, structure, style. Whenever I try to create something and play around with it, it for whatever reason, it just continues to write in sort of AI style voice, tone, structure, right? It just sounds like AI. And so I don't think it's there yet. And I think, but it's not far away. I mean, we talked about the thing, I've been looking at GPT since 2, right? And I remember when 2 came out, and everyone was like, well, this isn't going to take over anyone else's jobs. This is terrible. And I was like, but it's 2. It's going to be better, right? And so it'll get there. I just don't think it's 100% there yet. I'm not afraid of it, but it does require some taking it easy, taking it slow, test into it. Make sure you're measuring everything you can measure around it. Make sure whatever framework you define as valuable content, make sure it's hitting all those notes. And I think it could work. The other thing I think about, and I haven't looked at them in the last week or so, but I've been sort of trying to monitor these sites during this algorithm update, is Red Ventures, CNET, Bankrate, all those sites. They were the sort of pioneers of AI content, and they seem to be still rolling along. So I'm sure that content is heavily edited and goes through a whole bunch of processes, but you know, their bylines on that content still says written by AI. And so it's working for someone, and we just have to figure out how to make the content work for what users are looking for.
Yeah, it's working for someone. I like that point. We had Alex from a company called Greg on the podcast a few weeks back. And they actually have a really interesting approach to AI generated content, in that the data source in which they're generating that content from is actually their own user generated content from their platform or the app. And so they're creating content with AI that could not be created by any other business. And it actually is very unique. To your point on engagement, yeah, you know, what I tend to get from an AI writing tool is like a very bland Wikipedia-like page. And I would think from an engagement standpoint too, like you're probably not going to send Google like all of that positive signal once you do drive a reader to a page that might be very bland and not personable.
Yeah, I agree. I love the first point as well. I think that's part of the key as well. When I think about like, this is just complete theory, so take this for what it is. But when I think about what a writer is going to look like in 2025 and 2026, right, they're definitely going to be using these tools, right? GPT is going to get better, or Claude, or whatever they're going to be or Gemini, whatever is going to be the tool, right? It's going to get better, right? So they're going to be sort of forced to use it because it's going to be that good. So how are you going to use it? I think it's what you said in the beginning. Feed it as much as you can, right? Feed it all your personal information, your personal data. Maybe you do interviews and you feed it interviews feed it that transcript of the interviews that you've done. Maybe you feed it other work that you've done, and then use all of that to create something new and create something unique. I think that's probably the future of it. Not, hey, I'm trying to write a blog post about how to train a cockapoo. Give me a 700 word blog post, right?
Yes. And to your point on Red Ventures, I know that they were kind of a pioneer in some regard about being upfront and honest that like their content is AI generated. For websites that are using AI generated content, do you think we need to add like that disclaimer to say, hey, this piece of content wasn't written by a human?
That's a good point. I think probably so, right? Because I think, first off, I think you could do it in a way. I like the way that Red Ventures did it. I like that they say, hey, you know, based on this article was written by AI, we also have expert people reviewing this content and editors going through this content, right? That's probably the best way to do it. I at this point, I wouldn't want to, especially because they're getting back into manual actions where someone's manually looking at your website. I don't want Google to guess on what I'm trying to do, right? Because in the past, they sometimes guess wrong. Right. And so I would rather be upfront.
Yeah. The easiest way to get a manual action is to just go on Twitter and explain to Twitter how you're manipulating Google search results. So if I've learned anything, it's to not go on Twitter and make exclamations about how I'm manipulating search. So if you don't do that, you might be okay. On the episode with Brett, he mentioned that you are using like different AI tools as part of like the content briefing and content outlining process. And so I do want to chat about content briefs, content outlines. I guess my first question before I ask what should have been my first question is, are they called content briefs or are they called content outlines? Are they the same thing? I've always used them interchangeably.
I don't know. I call them briefs and I don't even do content briefs because I'm not a content manager. I'm not a content writer. I try to stick to SEO briefs, right? I try to stick this is what I'm looking for as an SEO and potentially what SEO searches are looking for. So that's the way I approach it.
What's interesting about these keywords from an SEO standpoint is we have an article about content outlines that like ranks on the first page for content outlines SEO. But then I was looking at the SERP for content briefs before this call, and I actually think we'd need a different article on our website to serve content briefs. So they could be the same thing, but at least the SERPs are telling us they're two different things.
I think they are. Yeah. I think when you think about, again, what writers do, voice, tone, style, right? Structure, right? That's completely different than what I'm thinking about. Right. So
what are you thinking about? Tell me about your process. Like what does it mean to create like an SEO brief for Duane?
I think for me, it's evolved a lot. It used to be, right, I would be hyper prescriptive, right? Not just like, here's all the keywords you should put in. But things like here's the exact outline you should follow, right? And here's the exact word count. And over the years, I've tried to be a little bit more humble and say, I am not a writer, so I'm not going to tell a writer how to write, right? A writer is going to know how to write much better than I'm going to tell them how to write. What I'm more interested in is guiding them into what I think searchers and Google is looking for. So we talked about that, like, what is valuable content? What is helpful content, right? I see that as my job as an SEO creating these briefs, is saying, okay, you're thinking about writing this article from just a pure writing perspective. How do I get the voice tone style structure right? How do I make sure that I'm accomplishing reader goals and things like that? I'm looking at it from, this is what I think searchers are looking for in terms of what they deem as valuable or helpful content, right? So for me, it starts off, I'll throw in some basic stuff, a target keyword, right? I'll throw in things like, you know, if a target keyword has a feature snippet, I'll call it out and say, hey, try to target that. And I'll throw in, like, just, you know, what I think people are wanting, similar to your point of the SEO brief versus content brief, right? I'll try to throw in what I think searchers are actually looking for when they're targeting that, when they're doing that search for that keyword, right? What type of information that they're looking for. And then, you know, for me, I'll throw in like a sample outline, right? Again, it's not prescriptive. It's only prescriptive if there's like a hard line template, like if it's a landing page or a landing page style thing, or like there's just a hard template that we want to follow, then I'll say, hey, this is the template we want to follow. But if it's just a general blog post, I'll say, here's a way you can go with it, but feel free to edit it however you see fit, right? So that's typically how it starts for me. Give them some basic background information, try to identify why people are searching for it. I'll put in there like questions people may want to ask as they're doing a search for that term. And then based off of that sort of initial information, here's a basic outline and start there. And then it'll progress from there, but that's typically where it starts. So from there, now we're trying to look at so this is like SEO 2015, right? Up until this would be my content brief, right? And this would be sort of the ultimate guide to training cockapoos content brief. But now we are in this new world. So I try to think about, okay, where do we go to make it viable? You mentioned earlier uniqueness, right? The analogy I really love that someone at Google said that I really love is that if you think of page one, think of page one as a product. In a product, we don't want to create the same feature over and over again. We want to create a new feature, right? And so the question is, how does your content act like a new feature on page one? If we consider page one its own product, where does your piece fit? So that to me is like, how do we find unique content? There's two things I like to, or unique ways to think about it. There's two things I'd like to do. One, and I can send you a link after the call and you can add this to the show notes. But one is a principle called information gain that I've been really following. Someone looked at a patent, Google patent, that talked about information gain, which is basically, you look at page one, who's adding something new to page one, right? And they have a really good process for it. They would take your target keyword in Google, and then they would, instead of just doing a search and trying to find like new ways to present information or new information to add to the page, they would actually do a search for files. So you do a file type PDF, file type PowerPoint PPT, file type doc for Word doc. Those, the content in those files aren't going to be readily available for the average searcher. There's actually going to be new content in there, likely, if you start to go through those, that you can actually incorporate into your article. An example, I think I've shared this on one of my posts on LinkedIn, I think around like homeowners insurance. And there's actually like five different ways that you can sort of classify different types of homeowners insurance that no one on page one talks about, right? And so that would be information gain, something new to add. You could source that internally, but that's just one way to sort of find it on your own. So that's one thing I think about, what's new to add to the page. The other thing I really love to do, you know, a lot of blog posts and even landing pages have FAQs. And typically the FAQs are like, and this is fine. It's typically like people also ask questions or just common questions. I like to use this as like the unique question opportunity. Like what's not being asked that should be asked, right? And so I'll use a tool like ChatGPT or whatever and a prompt that's like, hey, here's my outline or whatever. Give me 20 questions that are unique that no one else is going to be asking on any other page, right? Some form of that, right? And then I'll pick out the five or so that I think are actually unique. But I love that as another way of like just adding some uniqueness to a page. So that's the next step in the copy brief is, SEO brief is to add some more uniqueness. And then the last thing I'd like to add is some sort of first-person perspective. So I'll guide the writer. And so I'll provide the writer, hey, here's 10 ways that you can add your own perspective or the perspective of someone in the industry or whatever. A lot of times, and you'll see this, I think across a lot of sites, a lot of times the writers that I work with will go on like Help a Reporter Out or quoted.com to find like experts in the industry that they can get quotes from. So that's another way to sort of add first person perspective. But that's sort of the last step I think about is like that first person perspective. How do we add that to the page?
We're about halfway through this episode of the Optimize podcast, and I just want to give a special shout out to our sponsor. You might have guessed, positional.com. Check out their awesome set of tools for content marketers and SEOs. And now back to the podcast. You mentioned something that's really interesting to me. You mentioned that you ask ChatGPT to tell you what's missing that like no one is currently tackling, but that might still be good questions related to a specific topic. And that's really interesting to me because at Positional, we have this feature called Unanswered Questions, which tries to identify like what are the things missing from your article versus what like the top SERPs are doing or what questions they are answering. But I've been asked a few times now, like, Nate, can you tell me what no one is talking about that everyone is missing, including myself. And it sounds like you might be able to do that with ChatGPT. So, Dwayne, you might be shaping our product roadmap here today.
Fantastic.
I didn't actually know that was possible, but thank you. I'm going to Slack my co-founder, Matt, right after this. I just wrote a big note here.
I love that. And the other way that I sort of approach those questions, especially FAQs, I actually got this from another client. That was actually a really good idea, was to not only approach it from like a unique perspective, which is something unique that you can add, but also what's something that's going to, you know, if there's a problem that's trying to be solved, that the person is trying to solve, right? I'm trying to stop my dog from barking. What are the unique FAQs that also sort of help clear obstacles from me solving that problem? So again, it isn't just do all cockapoos bark. I don't really care. I just care about my cockapoo. You know, I want to know, is there a specific technique that works better for cockapoos that doesn't work for other dogs, right? Or something like that. Or is there a certain time frame that I can expect how long this is going to take before I can start to see progress, right? So A, think about unique questions and then make sure those questions are aligned to like clear obstacles and really get to that solution, not just a general information FAQ.
And apparently cockapoos are not known to bark excessively, but they do bark according to the featured snippet.
It's totally just my dog.
And so back to that point on information gain, I've got two approaches here that I want to run by you on. I want you to tell me what the better approach might be. So approach number one would be to create an article that's entirely unique. Let's imagine this article is 100% information gain. And option number two is an article that's at information parity with the other top SERPs, but then has maybe 25% information gain. So it's parity and then above. Do you think the better approach is to put out something that's just like totally unique and unlike anything else in the SERP, or to do kind of a hybrid approach of aligning to the SERP, but then still adding additional value?
I think I would vote for the latter. The reason I say that is I think for most problems require some semblance of the same amount of context before you can get to the solution, right? Like I need to know why dogs bark. I need to know sort of anxiety things and maybe it's trauma in the beginning, but I need to know that before I get to an actual solution. So for me, the 75% is probably going to be pretty similar. The 25%, the solution part, is where I would shine, right? Or at least where I would try to shine versus like come up with completely different reasons why a dog barks and completely different triggers for a dog and stuff like that. Like that feels off to me. And my guess is that Google's probably looking at that as well. And if you don't have that backed up by something, right? If that's not shown in some sort of journal somewhere or something like that, and the consensus is not saying that, that's probably a red flag for them, is my guess.
Yeah, I'm trying to picture like me writing just a totally unique article about like how to stop cockapoos from barking. And I could probably come up with like 20 interesting ways to stop them from barking, but like none of those are probably, you know, credentialed or like who is Nate to say like this is how you stop a cockapoo from barking. So it sounds like sourcing is another important part of this. Would you say that's true?
I think so. And I think you could take the completely different article approach, not by just writing a whole bunch of different stuff, but containing it just a completely different perspective, right? If so going back to the dog barking thing, this is a big problem in my life. So I had a vet, took my dog to the vet and I was like, how do I get this dog to start barking? This is a veterinarian. He has dogs. He's been around dogs. He does all the things. And he says, you know, I don't actually stop my dog from barking. I had someone break into my house while I was sleeping and the dog didn't say a word. And so now for me, the dog barks, but at least I know that when someone gets in my house, so that's another way to think about it, right? Like you can still have all the context of why they bark or whatever, but like you can say, hey, it's actually a good thing. If you wanted to sort of control it, here's some solutions for that. So that's another way that maybe you can.
Yeah, your dog's. Oh, and by the way, what is the name of your cockapoo?
Lady. God.
Lady?
Yes.
Yeah, Lady's trying to protect the household.
She is.
I realize we're kind of getting off track here, but I'm having so much fun. I know that in years past, there's been a lot of talk about your money, your life, and, you know, the sourcing that needs to happen and almost like the mirroring that needs to happen with your content in certain health spaces, finance spaces. For example, like if we're writing an article about the, you know, cures to heart disease, you know, Google wouldn't want to rank an article that's got like 25 homemade cures to heart disease. And so I'd seen an interesting tweet. I wish I knew who tweeted it. If we can find it, we'll put it in the show notes. But they tweeted that search today is like your money, your life principles apply to all SERPs was like the argument they were making, that your money, your life isn't just finance and health anymore. Your money, your life is everywhere. Would you agree with that perspective?
It's one of those weird terms that like I can make dog barking your money, your life if I really wanted to. Like it's, yeah, I apply it to all of it, right? Like it doesn't seem any different to me. I guess if it was health, you know, if it was health related, I guess I would definitely do things like have it medically reviewed by a doctor and not just use random sources, but like journals and .govs and stuff like that. So I guess I would take it to that level of scrutiny. But yeah, I mean, I whenever I write a page, I don't want to send anyone down the wrong path. Like I want to make sure that I'm giving them the right information. And so, yeah, to me, everything is your money, life.
And would medically reviewed by be a direct ranking factor, or is it indirect in the sense that maybe searchers just prefer to consume content that they know is medically reviewed and therefore the engagement signals are going to be stronger? Or do you think something like that is actually a direct factor in search?
This is actually a really good thing that I've been thinking about a lot lately. You know, Google and these latest algorithm updates have said, hey, don't chase us. Right? Don't chase out algorithms, right, for users, right? I think to me, the way that I approach it is chasing the algorithm is writing for users. I have a limited amount of data. I got Google Analytics 4. Maybe I got like Microsoft Clarity or some other sort of content engagement analytic platform. But there's a lot that I'm just taking a stab at and seeing what happens as well. The algorithm is also telling me what I think searches are wanting, right? And so if I see for a search like, how to prevent heart disease, the top 7 out of 10 have this medically reviewed thing, it's possible that it's baked into the algorithm. And if it is, great, because Google's got a ton of data on what users actually want. I'll trust them more than the limited amount that I have in Google Analytics 4 or any other platform. So yeah, I think it could be both. I think, yes, it could be baked into the algorithm, and I think users want it as well.
That's such a good point. Like as SEOs, we really want to pay attention to the characteristics of pages that are already ranking well for a given SERP, because Google has so much more data than we do in terms of knowing what users prefer. And so we should really take a lot of signal in that. And I was recently writing an article, a blog post for our site about people also ask questions. And, you know, one of the suggested tips that I included to optimize for them was to like align the format of your answers to like the formats that Google pulls in to people also ask. But then I had a thought while I was thinking, I was like, you know what, like, even if we get that people also ask question or not, by like including that that correct formatting that Google perceives to be the correct formatting around that question, that's probably creating a helpful experience that they've identified. Anyways, I'm sending us down this rabbit hole, Duane. Thank you for staying with me. I know I've strayed from the outline, but this has just been so much fun.
I think it's more me. And by the way, I agree with that perspective. That's exactly the way I approach it. Same thing, feature snippets. If I get it, great. If I don't, I've made the page better, most likely. Yep.
And I'm going to pull us back. I'm going to pull us back to my outline. So the next question that I had was on factual accuracy. Do you think it is important? And as a follow-up to that, can Google detect accuracy within content?
I have to think so, right? Like it's, and again, not accurate in 100%, but they probably have a consensus, right? They definitely probably have a consensus of like, if 99% of people are saying this one thing, you're saying this complete opposite thing, then it might not be true. Do I think it's required? I don't know. But I do think this is one of those sort of user experience things that I just wouldn't want to put in non-factual content. And if I did, then I want to go back and fix it. And so, yeah, to me, the algorithm wouldn't even matter at that point. I want to get it right. And if I feel like it's something that's like disputable, or if it's like just a random stat that I'm throwing in, like, I need it sourced, right? It needs to be sourced.
Yeah. There are probably some things that Google can clearly know if it's factually accurate or not. But I'd have to think there are a lot of things that Google doesn't know what's factually accurate or not. And I'll give you another very specific example. So I was writing this blog post about people also ask questions. And, you know, naturally, while I was doing my outline, I looked at what was ranking really well today. And there's one article from a very well-known SEO tool. There's another article from another very well-known SEO tool. And article number one said that people also ask results are most often like surfaced from pages that are already ranking on page one of the SERPs. Article number two actually did an analysis and found that that was not the case, and that it wasn't always, or most of the time, I think they said that the top, you know, people also ask questions were not also pulled from the top page of the SERPs. And so within the first page of search results for this keyword, people also ask, you've got two pages saying two completely different things. And does Google care? I don't know. But like one of those results actually backed up their statements with data, the other did not. For the user, I think the site, whether they're right or wrong, still presented their argument with data. And I think that is probably a more helpful experience than a site that's maybe making a misleading claim with no data. And so I guess like if we're in a situation where factual accuracy is debatable, I guess what Google might want to see is that if we are making claims, whether it's debatable or not, like we are sourcing to something to say that the way that we perceive the world is accurate. Again, I'm sorry to send us down this rabbit hole, but I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. And I tend to think about, like, again, if I'm on, so like you said, the page that had the data just feels more trustworthy, right? We're talking about double EED or whatever you want to call it, right? That feels like that satisfies that trustworthiness factor pretty well for me, that you made a claim, you backed it up with something. Like, no one's going to be 100% right on everything or have all the information or whatever. But can you, when I look at the page and if I'm getting information, it's the problem that I feel like I got from the top three results for How to Train Your Dog, right? Like they didn't feel like, man, they've gone through and they've tested with 100 dogs this process and they've got this built out framework that they've built out over hundreds of hours of testing. I never got that, right? So I'd rather just go to someone who's actually got the stuff, who's actually doing the stuff, right? And I think, yeah, that's more what I'm looking for. Obviously, we don't want to just deceive people and just put in fake data just to make it more trustworthy. But to me, that's, for me personally, that's the experience I'm looking for.
We are going to need to have Caesar Milan,
guy
from the
dog.
Yeah,
he's going to crush me. These dogs are super easy to train. What are you doing?
We're going to need to have him on the podcast. Maybe he'll be a part of like the Jeopardy show we were joking about earlier, Dwayne. And I'm going to ask another question that's not on the script or the outline that I put together. But I do you do a whole lot of like content updating or like refreshes? Is that something you spend time doing?
Yeah, I do. I do. Probably not enough. I was just thinking about this today. I probably don't do it enough. I probably should do it a lot more. But I do it quite a bit. And so for me, you know, what triggers that? Number one for me right now, what triggers it is it's just not ranking. Like if it's not on page two or page one, it's probably not going to work, right? It probably needs to be something big to it. If it's on page two, then maybe I'll do something light to it, right? Maybe like add a section here or there. But if it's on pages 3 to 10, it's not working. I got to try something else. So that's really the sort of main trigger. You know, what I was thinking about today as I was looking through some clients, and it's like, I need to really focus on page one too. Like those are important too, especially when, you know, something simple, you got your published date on there and that published date just keeps getting farther and farther and farther away, right? It just sort of looks not as it doesn't stand out as much, right? If it's 2022 versus 2024, right? So that's something simple. Google has said they have freshness in the algorithm. So that's probably another good reason to do it. I think, you know, for me, in my experience, a lot of companies, they focus way too much on new content, right? You know, most content needs to be touched pretty quickly and pretty regularly if you wanted to continue to have those rankings, right?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And, you know, I hit a point at my first company where, you know, we were spending 80% of our editorial resources improving what was already there and 20% on new content. Because I feel like all websites hit a point where like you've covered every keyword you want to cover and you just have to go back and try to improve what you've already got. I want to ask one more question on content briefs before we head to the lightning round. What is the biggest mistake you see made in a content, or I should say SEO brief, that you see and it just frustrates the heck out of you?
For me, the biggest mistake, and the biggest mistake that I talked about this earlier, the biggest thing I made in my career as well, is being way too prescriptive. Again, for the most part, we're nerds, we're not writers. And so I think if you don't, for me, our job is to guide them into what we think searchers are wanting, right? And what searchers think is valuable content, not to help them write the whole thing, right? Not to be so prescriptive. I think for a couple of reasons. One, like I said, we're not writers. Let them do what they do best. The other thing is, look, there's a real stigma around having to write SEO content from writers, right? That they have to spend all day putting in keywords and doing the stuff that, you know, we typically would do, write the ultimate guides and stuff like that. And that seems restrictive. It doesn't follow sort of workplace best practices of how do you enjoy your work. And so, yeah, I think, you know, it's important for me to have that separation of I'm focusing just on what I think searchers are looking for. I want you to write the best content to solve that problem, right? And so that's what I think the biggest mistake is.
Yeah, whenever I post a job on Upwork and like one of the proposals that comes in says like, I'm an SEO writer, I'm like, I'm not going to hire you. Like I try to hire writers that like say they're not SEO writers, because if they're SEO writers, then I'm just going to need to like untrain them on how to not do a bunch of things. Dwayne, this has been so much fun. We're going to have you back for another episode. And I know we were joking about having like an SEO Jeopardy session. That would be awesome.
That would be
definitely
sweet.
Want you to be a part of that. It was Zachary, our producer, is going to have to figure out how to get that going. I imagine he'll be involved. Dwayne, we've made it to the lightning round.
Awesome.
I've got some pressing questions I need to ask you. The first is about content briefs. How long does it take to create one of these briefs?
Yeah, so I've gotten it down pretty fast. So, you know, for the process I outlined earlier, it would take me 30 minutes to an hour per brief. And then I built some ChatGPT prompts to really dial that in and really get all those sections built out. So if I'm doing one brief at a time, I'm just putting in prompts in the ChatGPT. Now I can get that done, you know, 15, 20 minutes. And then now I've taken it to the next step. This is probably what Brett was speaking to. I use, for me, Google Sheets and Google Apps Script is my tools of choice. And so now I'm using the OpenAI's API, and I'm just pushing that page by page, line by line, all that into ChatGPT. So now I can get 20 to 40 done in an hour or so. Similar to what you've built on Positional as well.
No, I mean, 20 to 40 in an hour. So that's like 3 minutes per brief. That's remarkable. A question that I always get asked, like we work with a lot of startups and they say to me, Nate, like I go on Upwork, I post my job. Does that person I hire need to know a lot about that topic I'm asking them to write about? Or can I just write a really good outline and expect that writer to figure it out? What would you say to that?
Yeah, I think most of the writers that I've worked with aren't subject matter experts. There's a handful where it's like, some of my clients have in-house writers, so they for sure are. But a good chunk of them are. I don't think so. I think you need to be a really good writer. I think there's a skill to writing. An example of this is I was working with a writer to work on just an SEO PDF, just a basic SEO 101 PDF. And so I put all these notes together. And I'm like, man, I can write some of this for you. And they're like, no, I'm a writer. This is what I do. You've given me all the notes, right? I have some experience with SEO. And so, yeah, I'm fine. And it turned out, yeah, it was great. So I think writers know how to write. The brief process is really to help them guide into what they should be thinking about and how they should approach it. And then once they have that, let them go to town. I do say that, you know, my briefs are pretty big. They're 7, 8, 9, 10 pages. So I do think it's important those first couple of projects that you do with a writer to go, if you have a brief that detailed, to go step by step, line by line with them on that brief so they understand what's going on in it. And then once they sort of get what's happening, then you can say, okay, you got it. You're on your way. But so that's one thing I want to make sure I call out.
Yeah. You know, I would say the biggest mistake that I see, especially with our early stage customers, is they actually just don't do content briefs. They do all the keyword research and they then assign those keywords to a writer and say like, go. And what ultimately ends up happening is they're not as happy with that piece of content. And anyways, I should get to another question here. As far as like SEO mistakes go, I've asked this question on the podcast a few times. In the lightning round specifically, what is the one thing that you see SEOs spending time on that is just a total waste of time?
None of it. I'm of the perspective that it all matters. The reason I come from that perspective is that I've been in some pretty competitive industries, right? Internet, TV, insurance, legal, right? These are the competitive and competitors. And I'm always looking for inches, right? So I'm looking at everything. Now, prioritization matters, right? I'm not going to focus on alt text before I focus on the quality of the content. But if I've gone through my checklist of like my priorities and alt text is next or meta descriptions is next, I'm hitting those, right? I'm looking for every edge that I can get. And so, yeah, I don't think anything that SEOs do is the mistake. The prioritization is a mistake, right? That's what's missing.
And final question, how can our listeners follow you or get in touch with you? What's the best way to connect?
Yeah, appreciate that. So LinkedIn is my place of choice. So that's where I post a lot of tools and templates and really get into scripting and utilizing APIs and OpenAI and starting to get into Claude a little bit. So I'm going to be posting a lot of stuff there. So LinkedIn @Dwayne Hogan, best place to find me.
Well, we will include links to your LinkedIn and all of your social profiles in the show notes. But Dwayne, this has been so much fun. You know, you and I have known each other for a few years, and I want to have you back on the podcast at some point because I've really enjoyed this episode, and I appreciate you sticking with me as I wavered far away from the outline that I had created. But thanks so much for coming on the Optimized Podcast.
Yeah, this has been great. Thanks so much for having me. And thanks to Brett, who connected us as well. Brett has been a champion of my career for 10 years. And so I'm really appreciative of him as well.
Yeah, Brett's the man. And it seems like he's having a lot of success over there with Jim Bird. It's kind of a rocket ship. And so that I think you might be working with him a little bit on Jim Bird. Is that right? Yeah, that must be fun. It's always fun when you've like reached like the Valhalla moment in search, and it seems like Jim Bird has gotten there, and it must be fun to work on it. But thanks, Dwayne. We will talk soon. Take care.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Optimize Podcast. This episode was brought to you by Positional. At Positional, we've got tools for content optimization, keyword research, internal linking, and so much more. We'd love for you to check Positional out at positional.com. And you can always reach out to me too if you have any questions at nate@positional.com.